Okay. So, as we said, we've got this picture of our signal is dropping with some factor of the distance, and that what that factor is a bit up for grabs, and it's we should also realize that it's the actual receive power at any point is going to be is going to be probabilistic around that factor anyway. Okay. Now, so that's just something you can say about sending a signal between one point and a point sort of relatively far away, and the characteristics aren't changing much with small changes in distance. Okay. Now, in addition to this, what we're going to see is that we do have factors that change the characteristic with our small changes in distance. Okay. And so there's a, so just moving from this point to this point can radically alter the characteristics of the channel. Okay, so the factors that influence that are multipath again, how the signals are combining with each other, so how multiple copies of signals are combining with each other, and additionally, mobility. So just moving is causing your system to change as well. And how these changes impact on the signal itself, we'll see then, is further affected by the characteristics of the signal, the bandwidth of the signal. So we'll start by looking at sort of what impact multipath is having on our system. And as usual, it's complicated, so we're just going to look at what happens in our two-path case. Okay. And so instead of looking at the average, now we're looking at the actual amplitude of the signal received, and we'll see that it's, if we have two signals, a one and two, then the amplitude of the received signal is dependent on the amplitude of the two signals. But further, you can have either a strengthening or a weakening function based on the actual combination of the sinusoids, and that's encompassed as a cosine 2 by f, the difference in the times of arrival and the difference in the phase at arrival. So, multipath again, is affecting the time of arrival and as a result affecting the phase at arrival. And so that, again, will feed into this cosine factor and give you either increase or decrease in the overall amplitude of the signal. What we'll see is when we throw motion into the mix, frequency is also coming into play in the sense that the frequency of the signal appears to change. Okay. So the time of arrival of the signal changes, the phase changes, and potentially the frequency changes, and all of that has an effect on the amplitude of the signal that you receive. Okay. So, again, just to look at a simple example, let's neglect our phase and just look at our time differentials. Then, if F times T, F times delta T is some function of, or some n, then this term becomes 1. And again, we'll see that our amplitudes combine. On the other hand, if we're now offset by pi, then our cosine is minus 1, so change phase, and our amplitudes are taking away from each other. Okay. And so, again, if the distance differential is not huge, then those amplitudes are going to be similar, and so this is essentially destroying the signal. That's happening, again, periodically within frequency, and so this is giving us the certain frequencies with getting complete fading in versus other frequencies where we're not. So this is referred to as frequency selective fading. So if you're sending at a specific frequency, you can do the sort of total destruction of your signal or not. Again, within very small distance differences. So, again, these sorts of things are, this sort of effect is hard to sort of explicitly calculate out the signal. So typically, you develop statistical models for the representation. Now, the two main models that are considered usually are the Ricean model and the Rayleigh fading model. And so the difference between the two is with the Ricean model, a dominant path exists, so there is a line of sight path, and then everything else is essentially interfering with that. And with the Rayleigh fading model, no dominant path exists. And so it just gives you a slightly different model. Okay, so those have to be sort of, again, added on top of our exponential fading. Okay, now again, we need to sort of relate this to the actual type of signal a bit. And so we can do this by sort of considering the bandwidth of the system and then bandwidth relative to how much delay you're experiencing on multiple paths. Okay. So we can characterize what's happening according to, again, how much the signal, what's the spread of the delays experienced within the system. And then we'll see that depending on the frequency, these delay spreads have greater or lesser effect. And so we frequently talk about coherent, in frequency domain, we talk about the coherence bandwidth, which again is a statistical measure of the frequency range over which the response remains relatively static. Okay. And we refer to that range as the coherence bandwidth. Okay. So what this means is that if you know what this coherence bandwidth is, you can think about whether your signal is contained, or the representation of your signal is contained within that bandwidth or is spreading beyond that bandwidth. If it's within the bandwidth, then pretty much all the components have the same thing happening to them. If it's beyond the bandwidth, again, the signal is being distorted. Okay. So if we return to our two-ray example, the frequency difference between the fades is dependent on the delay times. Okay, so 1 over the delay spread. And so our coherence bandwidth is going to be proportional to 1 over our delay spread. And sort of as a rule of thumb, we said our coherence bandwidth is 1 over 5 times the delay spread. And again, now the delay spread is a characteristic of the terrain, of exactly what things are bouncing off, etc. Okay. And as I said before, the reason we care about the coherence bandwidth is that you will get the effect of the fades will be different depending on the bandwidth of your signal relative to the bandwidth, relative to the coherence bandwidth. Okay, so we classify this signal relative to coherence bandwidth. We use that signal, the comparison of the signal to the coherence bandwidth, to classify the type of fadings, the type of effect we get on our signal. And so the first classification is what's called flat fading, and here our coherence bandwidth is greater than our signal bandwidth. Okay, so essentially, if your signal has multiple frequency components, the same thing is happening to every one of the components. Okay. Now, your signal bandwidth is related to the bit duration or the bit rate. So let's say whenever your bit duration and your coherence bandwidth is related to your delay spread. So we can also say that the duration of the signal is much greater than the delay spread. So essentially you're receiving the same signal the whole time. Okay. So again, in terms of frequencies, flat fading means that at certain frequencies, fading means that at sort of specific frequencies, you're obliterating your whole signal. And since that's happening, again, for the entire signal spectrum, your whole signal is going to be affected. Okay, so this causes deep fades in our signal, and will require much greater power output at the transmitter to overcome that sort of an effect. Okay. Now, the opposite, the flip side, is we can have frequency selective fading, and here the bandwidth of your signal is much greater than your coherence bandwidth, and so what this means is that you're getting fades within the bandwidth of the signal, so you're essentially obliterating certain frequency components of the signal. Okay. So, this creates a distortion in the received signal. It's hard to model because each combination has to be modeled separately. And again, within the actual signal, again, components are being obliterated rather than the whole signal. Okay, so again, there's a relation between what's happening in the frequency domain and what's happening in the time domain. So here, bandwidth of signal is related to 1 over the bit duration. And so our delay spread is greater than our signal duration. And again, what that means is we're going to get inter-symbol interference. And so you're going to have to be trying to pull out multiple symbols. Okay. So, that happens at these, fractions of wavelengths. So by moving small distances, the characteristics of your reception change. This becomes further complicated by motion, and motion can be motion of the sender, the receiver, or even the environment, because if your environment's moving, how your paths are reflecting, your paths will reflect differently, etc. Okay, and so motion means motion causes an apparent change now in the frequency of the received signal. And that's referred to as the Doppler effect. Okay. And just, let me see if I can... Okay, so I had... So, as usual, refer to Wikipedia, but... if you think of sort of the lines as being the peaks in your signal, as you move, essentially it looks like the peaks are arriving. And if you're moving towards your receiver, it looks like the peaks are then arriving quicker and quicker and quicker. How the rate at which your peaks arrive is your frequency. Okay, so... again, this causes a change in the frequency now of the arriving signal. Okay, and so if we combine this frequency change with multi-path effects, this is going to look like sort of different phase changes along the different paths. So we can quantify the Doppler shift in frequency according to the motion, according to the speed at which your object is moving. Okay, so we're going to assume here that our sender is moving in at a certain velocity v. And it's a certain distance away from the receiver. Okay. Here's our... Here's our... That's the sender. Is the receiver that it's moving relative to the sender, and so the change in distance, so the change in distance is again going to, and the rate of that change is going to lead to the frequency change. Okay, so the over any small time delta t, the change in distance from sender to receiver is going to be d cosine theta, and that's again changing with velocities of v delta t cosine theta. So now the phase again is related to the wavelength, and exactly what fraction of that wavelength the signal travels, which again is changing due to our change in the distance the signal travels. And again, that's a function of our velocity and the angle that the car is traveling relative to where the signal's going. Our frequency then is the change of phase with time. So we can, it's 1 or 2 pi, and change in phase over change in time, and that becomes V over lambda cosine theta. Okay. As we saw in the on the Wikipedia page, if you're moving towards, if you're moving closer, if the objects are moving closer, then they're decreasing the amount of distance between the phases, so the shift, the Doppler shift will be positive. If you're moving away, the opposite's happening, you're going to decrease. So you're going to increase the distance between peaks, and therefore your Doppler shift is negative. Okay. So if we have a multipath environment, signals traveling along different paths will experience different Doppler shifts. And so we're going to get a Doppler spread of how much the frequencies are varying. Again, frequency is related to time, and so we can, as a sort of complementary concept, we have coherence time, and the coherence time is then the time over which the channel response is essentially invariant, and we can define that as T coherence. Okay, and so again, if we sort of try and make that a little more concrete, we can look at our two-ray example, and the time between the fades then is related to 1 over the difference in the two frequencies. Okay. And so the coherence time then is proportional to the inverse of the Doppler spread. So the more the frequencies are changing, the shorter the coherence time, the shorter the longer the coherence time, the less the frequencies must be changing. So Doppler effects depend on the duration of the signal relative to coherence time, and again, that can either be characterized in terms of our Doppler spread or our coherence time. Okay. Again, this means we have two types of effects depending on how the characteristics of the bits relative to that coherence time. And so we have slow fading and fast fading. Now, with slow fading, the channel characteristics are changing slowly relative to the speed of bit transmissions. And so that means that the Doppler spread is less than the bandwidth of the signal. Okay. And what this means again is that in terms of our signal duration, for the duration of the signal, our bandwidth characteristics are remaining the same. With fast fading, we have the opposite. The characteristics of the channel are changing rapidly within the duration of a symbol. So the coherence time of the channel is smaller than the symbol period. And so again, that means you're going to get some distortion of your signal. Okay. So in practice, fast fading occurs only for very low data rates. Okay. And so again, those are what you can relate the Doppler shift. You can relate this in the frequency domain, so the changes are greater than the signal bandwidth, or again, the signal duration is greater than the coherence time of the channel. So again, generally, it's assumed that the fading experience is slow fading. Okay, so this is, yeah, just threw this in for future reference. Again, this relates the, this just categorizes the different sorts of small scale fading that you can experience. And again, based on either multipath effects or motion and Doppler effects. And again, the Doppler effects also come into play because of multipath. Okay, so again, your initial picture was again with this linear log normal fading, but now we additionally get small scale fading effects as well. And so, again, the effects are going to depend on these specific characteristics of the signal that we're transmitting. But generally, again, with distance, we have this sort of average value, this decrease with distance squared, and then beyond that, again, we have these other effects which are decreasing the power levels more significantly, but again, sort of only at certain points, and so we want to have the receiver sort of having sufficient sensitivity, not just to receive the average, but also it needs to deal with most of the fades. So again, exactly what happens depends on the type of signal we have relative to the characteristics of the channel. And so, you know, just to have a quick look at that, we're going to consider signals being transmitted at three different bit rates. So 600 bits per second, that's really slow. It's going to take up the signal. The bits have longer time duration and a narrower frequency spectrum, sort of a faster transmission rate. So again, shorter bit duration, wider frequency bandwidth, and then much higher frequency bandwidth, as we'll see in sort of techniques that we use to deal with, modulation techniques that we might use to deal with some of these problems. Okay, so if we look at our low bit rate system, so this is a narrow band system, and so our bandwidth is quite small, and this means that our signal, this is going to be flat fading, so our characteristics are going to be the same, or channel fading characteristics are the same over the entire bandwidth of the system. We experience delays of less than a bit period. And so what we see is that in general you're okay unless your frequency happens to be at the fade point, in which case your signal's obliterated. Okay, so again, you can be fine at certain frequencies and not at all fine at others. Okay. Now, if we consider a faster bit rate, and so this was the original GSM bit rate, then our signal is going to have a wider bandwidth. And so you're going to encounter a number of fades within that bandwidth. Okay, so the signal's now experiencing selective fading. And so the signal is going to be distorted, but not attenuated. The delays here are a few times longer than the bit period, so we will experience inter-symbol interference, and so we're going to have algorithms to, again, deal with sort of copies of multiple bits arriving at the same time. Okay. And so in our final example, we have a wideband system. And so here, what we'll see later is we're using bit sequences to encode our bits. So there's multiple bits per actual bit set. And so we're going to, again, have distortion, and we're also going to have our inter-symbol interference. Okay. But, as we'll see later, we can use our bit encoding to distinguish between different signals arriving at the same time. So it's similar to the last case, but you have to be even cleverer in trying to sort out what the signal is that you're actually receiving. Okay. And so I won't dwell on this slide too much. We have this idea of using diversity to deal with the channel characteristics. So, yeah, as always, the diversity, it's allowing you in some ways to have sort of multiple pieces of information that allow you to sort of multiple pieces of information arriving on sort of different channels in order to try and guard against some of the problems we've discussed. Okay, and so we can play around with space, frequency, or time. Okay, space diversity involves the physical transmission path, so again, we can use multiple antennas to, again, change the transmission paths along which the signal is received, and again, if you move small distances, you can get much better characteristics, so hopefully, along one of your paths, you're getting, for one of your antennas, at least you're getting good characteristics. With frequency diversity, we try and spread our signal out over a larger frequency bandwidth or carry it on multiple frequency carriers, and so again, this allows for, again, spreading over portions of the channel that you know are going to actually be okay. Okay, and we'll see this technique. We'll discuss spread spectrum techniques shortly. Okay, and finally, the time diversity, so you can just change the time. You can send your data at multiple times, and so if you have burst noise, then that could possibly deal with that. Okay, so we'll at some point return to both the ideas of frequency diversity and space diversity as being the techniques that are used in more modern transmission systems to, again, improve the characteristics of the signal. Okay, so again, just to wrap up what we talked about today, we have our received signal is changing from sender to receiver, changes with distance, large scale fading refers to those changes that, again, can be observed over long distances, and we can pretty much sum it up as our power is dropping as some factor of the distance, some power of the distance. Okay. And when we go to talk about cellular systems and how we arrange cellular systems, that's the key factor. Small-scale fading means that things are a good bit more annoying than that, and that by even changing small distances, you can have significant changes in the characteristics of your channel. And so basically that means that we're going to be looking at, as we go on, different modulation techniques that can try and improve relative to these relative to these small fluctuations. Okay, so that's it for today. I guess one thing to think about is that, we've seen that our channel conditions can be unpredictable, our degree of loss will vary, and so, again, we can think about what sort of techniques can we come up with to deal with this, and we'll see various techniques as we move along through the course. Okay, so that's it, and I will see you guys next week.